Daniel chapter 2. Now this second chapter is a rather lengthy chapter, and it has a lot of the information and facts that are going to be a part of the rest of the book, especially when we get into the seventh chapter. And so it's important that we understand and get the foundation in as we have it here in Daniel chapter 2. Now, last time we were approximately verse 17, 18 along in the area there where the decree of the king has gone out that all the wise men are to be slain. And they come to get Daniel and his friends and knock on their door. They may have all been rooming together. It's probably during that period of time whenever they were training there and had a lot of studying and homework to do or whatever. I don't know. But whenever he knocked on the door and said, "Come on, boys, you're going to be executed." Can you imagine that kind of a shock? Here these young men are. They've had special attention and all that. And now they're called upon to come follow Arioch, the king's guard, head guardsman here, out to be executed. Just like that. That's the message that comes to them. And one of the qualities and traits we talked about that showed itself so well in Daniel here is in verse 14, when Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom. In other words, with self-control. You know this verse in the scripture that says, "Be not afraid of sudden fear." You know that? Be not afraid of sudden fear. When you hear bad news, boom, it comes in. What are you supposed to do? Well, the first thing, be not afraid. Be not afraid. I got a thing in the mail today from some outfit. It was a folder. It had three or four different articles in it. It had a whole catalog that you could order materials from this patriotic book company. But the first thing when I opened it up, it said on the front of this magazine, it said, "Be afraid." And I showed Carol, I said, "This is not of God. Throw it in the wastebasket." I mean, that's all I had to know from the whole rest of it. Wasn't used to look at anything else. Wasn't used to mess with anything else. Wasn't to go any further than that, you know, because it said, "Be afraid." And every place I read in the scripture, God says to his people, "Be not afraid." Over and over, everywhere you find it, "Be not afraid." The one thing that we're not to do is to be afraid. It turned out, I looked at the catalog, and it was, of course, one of these so-called strong patriotic anti-Israel magazines, all kind of things to order that attack the Jews and so forth. So I was right from the outset of what the stuff was. It was trash, and that's where it went into the trash. But Daniel kept his self-confidence, his head. He didn't say, "Oh, God help us, what are we going to do?" You ever know people like that whenever they get bad news over the telephone or somebody tells them something bad and awful, they say, "Oh," you know, throw up the hands and scream and holler, that sort of thing. That's not the attitude and that's not the spirit here of Daniel. He kept his composure, showed wisdom, and said, "Well, tell me about it. What's the situation here?" And so he did. He told him about it. And he said, "Why is the decree so hasty from the king?" Then Arioch made the thing known unto Daniel. And then Daniel went in and desired of the king. It's interesting there that we don't know how he got the invite or anything else, but he undoubtedly was through Arioch. But he asked of the king, he went in before the king, and he asked of the king time, and he said, "I'll tell you the interpretation if you'll give us a little time." Now, that in itself showed something that the king felt toward Daniel and the reputation Daniel had already gathered in this heathen land, for the king to give him more time because that is what the rest of these fellows had asked for, and he had refused to give them more time and said they were lying, and they were just trying to put things off to save their necks. But he agreed to give Daniel more time. Now, there's something I want to emphasize this every chance that I can remember it as we go through this study. Don't forget Israel. Don't forget God's chosen people. And don't forget that Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, along with some others who had been brought down to that land, are there in this heathen land representing God, the true God, the living God, the only God. You see? And they're down there as his representatives. God put them down there for just such occasions as this that's taking place. Because even though God has cast his people aside, even though God has dispersed them now into Babylon and the other nations of the world, and they've been dispersed now for some, 2,700 years or so, God has not forgotten his people. God always has his people in mind. God has a plan and a program for his people. He's going to bring them back. He's going to restore them to the land. This is the times of the Gentiles, and it started here with this king, Nebuchadnezzar. But the times of the Gentiles are going to come to a close, and God is once again going to deal and work and speak through his people, Israel, the Jews. See? And as soon as the rapture of the church takes place, then he's going back to dealing with his people. And then at the close of the tribulation, Christ is going to come back and establish his kingdom and be headquartered in Jerusalem and judge the nations and so forth. So don't forget that, as we've talked about it from time to time, the plan of God, the program of God, the ministry. Don't forget that. Daniel is down here with specific purpose. Now, Daniel goes home after he gets this message, and he tells the other boys, he said, "Fellas, we're in trouble. We got to have a prayer meeting." Now, here again, we see something. First of all, as soon as Daniel found out and got all the facts of the thing, he brought it to the people of God. And he said, he didn't just say, "Well, I'll take this by myself, and fellas, y'all don't worry about it. I'll go off and pray and get the answer myself." He shared it with the others there and said, "You know, we're in heap trouble here, and we need mercy from God if we're going to live. That's what we've got to have. We've got to have mercy from God if we're going to live." Notice in verse 18. He said, verse 17, "Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to the others and his companions, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret." He said, "Now, we are up against it. We've got a set time." Now, I don't know how much time the king gave him. I'm sure it wasn't very much, maybe 24 hours, maybe 12 hours. I don't know. But he gave him a certain amount of time. And so Daniel says, "Now we need mercy. We desire mercy from the God of heaven concerning this secret." You know, and as we mentioned many times, that's the real attitude of prayer. Whenever we come before God thinking we deserve to have something, or that we deserve to be spared, like they might have come, saying, "The Lord, you know, you put us down here. We've worked hard for you, and we've studied hard for you, and we deserve to be spared. It's not right for us to get killed. It's not right for them to take our lives." No, that's not the attitude. No way. That's not the attitude. They came with humble hearts, and they humbled themselves before the Lord, and they said, "We're sinners. We don't deserve anything from you, Lord, but you've been so good to us. And we ask mercy. Oh God, mercy. Reveal this secret to us. in order that we might be spared. Lord, have mercy on us. It's not something we deserve, but it's something we cry out for, is mercy. And we need to remember that about our prayer life. We need to remember that about our prayer life, is that we need to come to God understanding who we are. We're sinners. We're sinners saved by grace. And what we need from God is mercy. We don't need justice. If we got justice, we'd all be in hell. We don't need that. We need mercy. That's what we need. And we need to cry from God. Now, let's pick up with verse 19. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. I personally believe that Daniel dreamed the same dream that the king dreamed. God just said, okay, I'll give you a preview, a rerun. He had it on video, and so he just ran it through Daniel, vision there, in the night vision. And whenever Daniel woke up from it, he blessed the God of heaven. The first thing he did was to bless the God of heaven. You see, they had an earnest prayer meeting. I'm sure there was seriousness in that prayer meeting. And I think, I'm sure the reason that God's work gets no more done, the reason we have needs that aren't met, the reason we have problems we can't solve, the reason that the church doesn't move forward or do the things that it ought to do is we just don't pray and get before the Lord like we ought to. Prayer is so basic and important to the work of God. I mean, we need to get on our face before God and cry out to God in seriousness, in dead earnestness. But, we're doing pretty good. We got a little money in the bank, enough for groceries, and enough to take care of the rent for the next month or so. And so everything's going along pretty good. And so we don't have much reason to cry out to God because we're looking at material things and not spiritual things. And so Daniel, as soon as God answered the prayer, it says, Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Now, I want you to get this in the next two or three verses here. There really is about more time taken up with Daniel's praise here and his adoration of the Lord than he is with the time he spent with the king when he got back in there. Notice this. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. Now, Daniel has been given wisdom. Daniel has been given information concerning this dream, but he understands that it came from God and that it belonged to the Lord. It was something that was the Lord's and the Lord gave to him. Now, verse 21. I think now in these two verses particularly, these next two verses, that Daniel is thinking about the dream. You'll notice the inferences here that the dream has been revealed to him and he's thinking about it. He changeth the times and the seasons. The dream, remember, gets into the times. It was what was going to take place in the future was the thing that was on the king's mind that got this whole thing started to begin with, which God put in the king's mind to desire to know the future. He put it in the king's mind. The king had a dream. Then God gave him a dream in line with that, and then he put such an interest upon the king till he just had to know the answer to this thing, the interpretation. So he says, God changes the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. And that's what the vision's about, isn't it? He giveth wisdom unto the wise. If anybody's got any wisdom, they got it from God. He gives wisdom to the wise. Well, wise people don't get wisdom. Just ordinary, common people get wisdom, and they become wise because God gave them wisdom. You see, they didn't get wise by studying. They didn't get wise because they got a lot of brain power. They didn't get wise, because of all their smarts. They got wise because they sought the Lord. They went to His Word. They looked to Him, and He gave them the wisdom. That's the point. That's what He's talking about. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that no understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. Now, this tells us, as I said, that Daniel is thinking, I think, of the vision, but he is thinking of it in terms of how that the Lord had given this vision to the king, and what all this vision means, and how much wisdom and knowledge there is involved in this dream that has to do with history and the future, prophecy. And so he praises and adores, magnifies the Lord. And this is a quality and characteristic, one of the qualities of, remember, we're talking about a 19-year-old boy. We're not talking about a 60-year-old man who's been down the road. We're talking about a young man who has remarkable love for the Lord and desire to please him in all those qualities. Now, verse 21, I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who has given me wisdom and might, and has made known unto me now what we desired of thee. For thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. And so, boy, their hearts are light. They're rejoicing together. Now, this says Daniel said this. This is his testimony. I'm sure that the other three gave like testimonies of praise and thanksgiving and adoration to the Lord for this matter. But we have recorded for us here what Daniel said and how he rejoiced in the Lord over this thing. Now, think of this. It's just such a wonderful feeling to have the answers in, to know the answers. Whenever somebody's fixing to test you and you know the answers, boy, that's great. And that's the way Daniel felt. God had given him the answer. Here was a critical situation. All these wise men to be killed, order already gone out. Maybe some of them already were killed. And now Daniel has what he told the kings in faith. He said, God will, I'll give you the answer. God will give you the answer. And now he has that answer, and he's ready to go back to the king. Verse 24, therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king. Now, notice that he kind of speaks with some authority here now to Arioch, for he tells him, said, don't kill any more of them. I don't know whether they were about the process or what, but he said, don't destroy them. Bring me before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation. He said, Arioch, I've got the answer. I know the answer to the king's problem. Now, boy, I'll tell you what, I don't know how much the rest of those wise men who weren't so wise, how they felt about Daniel and these fellows before this time. But I can tell you one thing, on that particular day, they were friends of Daniel. I'm sure they were proud of him, that he had this answer. Now notice, verse 25, then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus unto him, I have found. Now, just you ought to underline that in your Bible. You know, God doesn't leave anything out in Scripture. Here's old Arioch. Now, he's been running back and forth, chopping up wise men, and getting ready to do it. And now he goes running in there before the king, and he says, oh, king, live forever. I have found a man. don't hurt to get a little, you know, a little help with the boss. That's what he thought, you know, I guess. And if he could get a little, might do on his next report, had to go in on him, you know, as to how he'd been doing. He's the guy that found the fella, you know, that, which he hadn't any such of a thing. He just trying to get a good word in before the king. I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. The king answered and said unto Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, whenever you're before the king, the Nebuchadnezzar, they refer to his Babylonian name. He said, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? Now notice that Arioch had said, I found a man that will make known unto the king the interpretation. While the rest of those fellows had said they'd do that. But the king's not interested in just the interpretation. Notice he says, are you able to make known unto me the dream and the interpretation? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, soothsayers, show unto the king. In other words, he's not asking a question, can they not? He's saying they cannot, because this is not something that man can do. He's going to get in a good witness before this king. Now, he comes out of there having given a witness to the God of Israel. Now, even though these folks are now exiles, even though they're in captivity, yet they still worship the one and only true God. And Daniel is a representative of that one and true God. And so Daniel wants to be sure that the king gets that kind of a witness. And we're going to do a lot more of this before we get, especially we get in the fourth chapter. All right? So he said, the secret that you've demanded, these men cannot tell you. Verse 28. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets. There is a God. These gods that you have, they're false gods. These gods that these men worship, that you've been bringing in here trying to get answers from, they can't give you the secrets. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Now notice how it takes this out of Nebuchadnezzar's hands and puts it into God's hands. This whole thing is set up by God. This is not a playhouse of Nebuchadnezzar where he's playing around with these wise men about dreams. God put it into Nebuchadnezzar's mind to start thinking about the future and wondering about what was going to happen. That's why he was thinking about before he went to sleep that night. And then when he went to sleep, he had this dream, okay, which further added to this. And then after he woke up from the dream, he had this desire, this impelling desire to know the answer to it. See, that all that's of God. That didn't happen accidentally. That's of God. And so it is here now. He said, this God that reveals secrets and made known to the king what shall be in latter days. He said, the Lord's going to show you what you wanted to know. That is, what's going to happen in the latter days. The dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind. Here's the verse I wanted. Thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed. What should come to pass hereafter? You see, these thoughts came into your head. I wonder what the future holds. I wonder how long I'm going to be the king. I wonder how my kingdom will end and what the next kingdom will be. He's thinking these kind of thoughts as a young king who's only been now for a little more than 2 years on the throne. That's what he's thinking. And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, now notice again, Daniel again wants him to know and understand that this is not because Daniel has any wisdom. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes. Now, right here, folks, there are different ways of interpreting this, but I don't think there's any question. And I read some of the old men like Gabelline and some of the others who I would rely upon their judgment in matters like this. Their sakes refers to Israel, to the Jews. That's the there here. But for their sakes, that is those that are in captivity, those Jews and all that are in captivity, that are followers of the true and living God, that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thine heart. In other words, king, God is doing this for his own people. He's not doing it for you heathen. Took a pretty brave fella to say that king, didn't it, that day? But that's Daniel. He's not doing it out of brassiness and trying to be a smart aleck or anything else. He's just keeping things in perspective, that everything God does, he does in harmony with his purposes. And God's purpose is, even though Israel had been cast aside, is to bring them back. This is for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, the interpretation, of course, being made by Daniel, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. So that God wanted you to know the thoughts of your heart, why they were there. What God really wanted to do is to give this great prophecy, which is going to be repeated in chapter 7, as Daniel himself has another vision. Now, thou, O king, sawest and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form was terrible. Now, he saw it in three-dimensional color, and he didn't have to wear glasses. The image was there. He saw it, and he saw it in all its glory and huge size and so forth. I don't know whether the image that he builds later of gold he tried to copy from that size or not. But anyway, he says, you saw this great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. In other words, it was a shocking thing. The image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet. Now, notice, we're going to see, of course, that these images, or these medals, represent different kingdoms. I mean, all the way down to the Roman Empire. And that it is in the time whenever the image has feet that are part iron and part clay, 10 toes of the beast that we see in Revelation and so forth, 10 kings that have power for a time under Antichrist, all have to do with the same thing. But now notice that was where the stone smote the image. Stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, and no place was found for them, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain, and fill the whole earth. Now, that's quite a vision, wasn't it? Quite a dream. It wasn't a vision. Quite a dream that he had there. And Daniel has given to him the dream. Now, having done that, he begins to give him the interpretation. And let's read that. Because this is what the king will know. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings. I'm sure he didn't mind hearing that. For the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom. Get that? Where'd you get your kingdom, Nebuchadnezzar? You got it because you was a brave warrior? Because you had a lot of soldiers? And you were able to go out here and conquer all these nations and defeat Egypt? All of the other areas, Syria and Assyria and all those places? No. The God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom. The God of heaven. He's going to learn that lesson really well before this thing's over. Power, strength, and glory. God gave you a kingdom. He gave you power. He gave you strength. He gave you glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of heaven, hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. It's very clear, isn't it? No, it's easy to understand this thing. So no hard interpretations here. Nebuchadnezzar, you are the head of gold. You are the king of kings. Amongst Gentiles, there will be no greater. None with more power. None with more concentrated authority. None in many, many different aspects that would compare to this king, Nebuchadnezzar. And so God set you up. God made you the king of this thing and gave you all these things. And then having told him that, he says, verse 39, and after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, forasmuch as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things. And as iron that breaketh all things shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with the clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. Well, I think we'll stop there, and when we come back next time, we'll pick up with this interpretation and look more fully at these four kingdoms and see what we can find out about them.